The reason I am having trouble with this mic is because my husband is on the phone with Dennis Apple, who is coming next week. And as you know, he and his wife, Tensi, run the Beatitudes House up in Guadalupe. And he's trying to find out if there's anything in particular that we might be able to help him with. And I think the answer is Pampers. So if anyone wants to pick up Pampers, that is one thing they're always in need of for their families. Large ones, Don says large ones would be the best. Size 2 to size 6. And as you know, they also have a clothing pantry and a food pantry, so... Is this thing still off? I guess so. The other thing I want to remind you of is that our last session is going to be about the wisdom of this community to celebrate our 40 years of existence, which is kind of extraordinary, isn't it? Is this working now? It has been working? Okay. Can this marriage be saved?
Did you mention Dennis Abbott and the diapers?
I did.
well, the latest is size 3 to 6 is more valuable than 1 to 2.
Okay, 3 to 6. Okay, there we are on that.
The diaper brigade.
Right. But the collective wisdom...
Just don't bring him to church.
The collective wisdom session, for that we are inviting people who feel called to do this to write up something, a few sentences that you can share on that final day. A few sentences, not more than 5 minutes, please, because we want to hear from you what Word in Life has meant to you and why you value it and... what that tells us about what we've been doing. Okay? So, I think it's time to come back to Suzanne. So, with no more ado, here we are.
So, the move... Am I on?
Yeah.
Okay. The move from... the individual to the person, how do we get there? So we'll go back to the original topic, which is spiritual practice. What spiritual practice invites us to is transcendent personhood. Now, transcendent personhood reflects a new axial consciousness, an ecological consciousness of belonging to a whole. Like Teilhard de Chardin, Beatrice Brutau sees the journey towards unity as one that looks beyond the individual toward the cosmic whole, because God Omega is at the heart of evolutionary life. So transcendent personhood is grounded in a metaphysics of unity consciousness, and it challenges the prevailing domination paradigm of social relations. The domination paradigm is a hierarchical pattern of relationships, and it's based on ontological difference. And it operates on the principle of mutual negation. I am not you, and you are not me. This metaphysics of alienation treats the other as radically different from oneself, and it promotes the consciousness of the stranger. I won't go there. The communion paradigm, on the other hand, is a reciprocal relation of the enhancement of being. unlike the domination paradigm in which the elements are outside one another. The communion paradigm sees beings as in one another. This is what Jesus did. By putting himself under the guise of food, literally into his companions. In the communion paradigm, Jesus' substance and energy, his attributes, his activities, and values were assimilated by them. And he lived in them as their own attributes, activities, and values. As his many sayings on indwelling indicate, whoever receives you receives me, Matthew. Whatever anyone does to my sister or brother is done to me. Another verse from Matthew. The works I have done, you also shall do. From John. So Jesus reveals the empowering presence of Omega as the unitive center of community. Thus, when we live from the center of Omega, we too are free to be food for one another. Think of Mother Teresa. She certainly became food for everyone she was in contact with. And there are perhaps many others we could name who are becoming food for one another. Now, evolutionary personhood, according to Illa Delio, draws its life from Christ, the Living One. Jesus is the exemplar of relationality, the one in whom spondic energy radiates outward in the evolution of a new cosmic community centered in God. Jesus heals people from his spondic energy. If the ill, the alienated, the psychologically disturbed allow Jesus' spondic energy to penetrate their beings, they are often healed of their maladies, be they physical, emotional, or spiritual. This is how miracles occurred. Jesus would say, "Your faith has saved you." What is this thing called faith? Perhaps it's the interpenetration of spondic energy, Jesus's and the person's being healed. Now we too are invited to allow the spondic energy of the cosmic Christ to heal us. We are invited to do this through fidelity to our spiritual practice. To not only receive the spondic energy, but to share it with others. We are invited to allow the cosmic Christ of evolution to help us live out of the Christic dimension of our lives. But in order for us to do this, we must shed the old coat of Greek metaphysics undergirding our individual souls and awaken to our deeper center, which is Omega, uniting us on a higher level of consciousness and love. Personhood is an ongoing activity that is dynamic in nature, and it is crucial to the future of evolution. Like Teilhard, Brutot held that the human person is nothing else than evolution conscious of itself. A person is one in whom there is a higher level of integral consciousness marked by a deeper level of relationality. Brutto calls this higher level neo-feminine consciousness. Yeah, like it, huh? Neo-feminine consciousness. And describes it as one of intellectual intuition and creative love. And those of us who've been coming here for years and reading the books, Ken Wilber's books, and we know we are moving continuously into another level of consciousness. And we know that intuition is often cited as the next level of consciousness that we're moving towards. The level of neo-feminine consciousness is community building, because it orients one towards others, making something new for the future by relating to others through the energy of love or goodness. Think about the Women's March in Washington throughout the United States and literally throughout the world. We know that something has died and is continuing to die in our American society. But at the same time, something is rising. Could it be spondic energy that is rising? Could it be neo-feminine consciousness that is rising? Pardon?
I certainly hope so.
So do I. Brutto expounds the principle of relatedness in terms of transcendent personhood and advocates that science discloses a radically new understanding of God and the world where human consciousness plays a significant role in shaping our future. Just as old wine cannot be put into new wineskins, so too one cannot put old ideas into a new understanding of the world. Today we have to deal with a radically new understanding of the human person. The old ways of thinking, including patriarchy, sexism, and discrimination, must come to an end. Now this poses a real challenge for us, doesn't it? If we truly, truly believe this, how do we pray? How do we worship together? How do we create a liturgy that allows for this radically new understanding of the human person? I have to be honest here. This has been my greatest challenge for the past 2 years. I have talked to abbots and abbesses on retreat and at the different monasteries where I go on my own personal retreat, and they too are struggling. At Snow Mass, I was there last November for a week, Abbot Joseph proudly invited us to a contemplative liturgy they have on Thursday evenings. It was lovely. They had a simple table at which the celebrant sat during the whole liturgy. They used chants throughout the liturgy. They began the liturgy with a chant, and they chanted the chant 10 times. By the 8th time, I said, "Ooh, that's enough." But it wasn't. What happens is the longer the chant goes, the more it settles inside, and all of a sudden the chant chants you. The liturgy was more informal, but they are stuck with using the traditional words of the liturgy. And I had a similar experience at Redwood Monastery a couple of years ago. It is truly not easy to remain faithful to our tradition and create something new. Yet it's a challenge we cannot run away from. It's a challenge that will be with us for the rest of our days as we really and truly absorb this new understanding of transcendent personhood. So it's a challenge that I embrace and will continue to struggle with as we struggle to create new forms of liturgy. Let's go back a little bit more now to fidelity to one's spiritual practice. Fidelity to your spiritual practice is the secret to transformation. I will say that again. Fidelity to your spiritual practice is the secret to transformation. We cannot buy transformation. We cannot transform ourselves. And so it becomes difficult for us as Americans to think transformation is something that we can do personally and individually. But the truth is just the opposite. All you and I can do is remain faithful to our spiritual practice. The work of transformation is the work of the Spirit. And the Spirit works the transformation process inside of us. Being faithful to our spiritual practice means that we do our twice-a-day sits or meditation or whatever spiritual practice you choose in good times and in bad times, in sickness and in health. When we receive peace-filled consolations, and when we feel desolate. When sitting is relatively easy, or when it is empty. When we feel full, or when we are bored out of our wits. It is in the times of boredom and unrest that the Spirit is free to unbind our wounds, heal us, and transform us. So don't give up. Don't give up when the going gets hard. Rather than giving up, reach out. Find groups in your area where they are holding meditation. There are a lot of meditation groups in Santa Barbara. There are lots of centering prayer groups. The truth is, we can't walk this journey alone. It's a journey that does become difficult, especially in those periods of real desolation and the feeling of nothing is happening. Why am I doing this? I'm wasting my time. I don't know anyone who's been involved in a spiritual practice who hasn't had those moments. They are real. They are true. What you and I don't understand many of the times is that it is exactly at those moments that the Spirit is reworking us, that the Spirit is coming in with, shall we say, spontic energy, and inviting us to reconnect with our own spontic energy. I'm aware that I've got just a little bit more to give, so what I'd like to do is end about maybe 10 to 12 with the final part of this, and be available for questions if there's anyone that would like to offer a question and or a reflection for about the next 10, 15 minutes maybe.
Thanks, Suzanne. Is there some way that you could help me connect the Mary Martha paradigm to what you're talking about with the spontaneous energy and the personal transformation? Do they fit at all in this picture?
I'm sure they fit in some way, but I haven't thought about it, so maybe you can share a little bit more about how you see it, might see it.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, Jesus said, after the story of Mary and Martha getting a little bit upset, you know, he said, well, Mary had the better part. And what did Mary do? Mary came and sat at the feet of Jesus and absorbed, shall I say, his spondic energy or whatever. And Martha was the one doing the work in the kitchen, preparing the meal, you know. And it always has struck me that there has to be, this is a kind of a paradigm of what we all need to do. We all need to pass from Mary to Martha, to Mary to Martha, depending on the situation. I mean, I think probably Dennis Apple will say that next week too, because mm-hmm. there probably are many days when he feels like Martha on steroids, and then very few maybe when he feels like Mary, you know.
Well, from what from what you're saying, Tom, what occurs to me is because Martha was whoops, did I do something? All right, because Martha was serving does not mean she was not serving from the place of spontaneous energy. We never do this work of personal and spiritual transformation for ourselves. It always goes out. And it must go out to others. I have a funny story that this reminds me of. Coming back from the retreat in Colorado. The very morning we were leaving, it was the first snowstorm. And so the news was that most of us had to fly out of Aspen to get to Denver, and then from Denver every which ways. And the weather forecast was that the planes were going to be flying out of Aspen. So the first group that left was around 7 o'clock, and my group was 8 o'clock. When I get down to the Aspen airport, and the first group is still there. And I said, what are you guys doing here? And they said, well, the plane that's supposed to arrive to pick us up hasn't come yet. And so we started watching, you know, the billboards and all that. Well, we got an announcement. The plane from Denver left. It is approaching Aspen, and we'll try to combine the two groups to get on this plane. So there was a great deal of rejoicing. Well, the plane couldn't land. So it could not land. So we all look at one another, and what are we going to do now? And one of the retreat directors who had taken us in said, well, I could take you back, but the airport here will not be open for another week at least in Aspen with the storms that were being predicted. So there was a bus that we could take from the Aspen airport to Denver, an extra $100. But about 8 of us got on the bus, and there must have been about 7 others that weren't from our group. And we start off. And so we all had our cell phones, and everybody was on their cell phone, you know, going to their respective flights, and were we going to make our flights, et cetera. Well, then we start off, and it just seems no matter which direction we went, it was impassable. We just couldn't get through. I think I saw the whole state of Colorado, and I said, you know, under different circumstances, this could be a very nice... I mean, we saw some beautiful sights. But needless to say, we all missed our flights. What was fascinating to me was our process. We're sitting on the bus, and we're all in good spirits. We've just had 8-day retreat, and we're all in the glow of the retreat. And we're all saying, well, we can deal with this. We can deal with this. And after about the 6th hour... one of the priests from South Bend, Indiana, trying to get back to South Bend. I've had it. This is this is too much. And then the whining and the complaint started. I was talking with somebody about that a little earlier, what happens when the glow of the retreat fades away. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with the saying, after enlightenment, the washing. Or the dishes. Enlightenment or transformation or all those things are never just a personal for myself personally. The spandic energy that gets awakened, the spandic energy that gets surfaced, is for others, not just for ourselves. It's for others. And so in this paradigm, I know in the way the paradigm is given to us, Mary complained, but she may have been acting out of her spandic energy center as well as Mary by sitting and listening and doing there and being there. So it's not for us to judge, because as you know, what's happening in our society, there's going to be a lot of action that we're that people are choosing to be involved with, and there's so much we have to which one do we want to get involved with? What we need to do is to bring a new level of consciousness to all the groups that we go to, and not go to these groups with the level of consciousness that we're fighting against. So it's but where do we get that, and how do we nourish it, is what spiritual practice is about. There's no getting there without spiritual practice. And I'll be honest with you, you're going to have those moments of deep desolation and what's it all about and why am I continuing this? Nothing, absolutely nothing is happening. Perhaps that's when the best thing is happening. But don't walk it alone. If you walk your journey alone, you will give up. Seek out others. Seek out others who have walked or are walking the journey and can accompany you. Go to groups. We have a Tuesday morning group at La Casa de Maria at 10:30. I look forward to that group every single week. There is so much energy that comes forth from a group sitting in quiet meditation together. It's wonderful. Go on weekend retreats. Go on 6, 7, 8 day retreats. Be serious about your spiritual practice. And when I say don't do this alone, sometimes we need the help of a psychologist. Sometimes we come up against walls within our own being that can be removed with good psychological work. Sometimes we need spiritual direction. If you choose spiritual direction, which I highly recommend, be sure you have a good interview with your spiritual director and tell them where you are and explain to them what your spiritual practice is, so that the spiritual direction will not go counter to your spiritual practice. Not every spiritual director has been trained in the ways of deep meditation, and it is not a put down. It is simply saying we need to find people that will help us move beyond where we are in our own place of spiritual practice. Okay, I think I can. You have a question, or did you want to read your poem?
First of all, I wanted to say, I can't imagine being in the kitchen stirring a pot while Jesus is in the other room teaching. But that's beside the point. That just occurred to me while I was thinking about it. And she could have invited him in the kitchen, but never mind. I facilitate and have for ever since it started in our church two of centering prayer groups. And I don't think I could do it if I didn't have my alone time as well.
Mm-hmm.
There is a place I go to in the summers. It's a meadow and a 98,000-acre forest.
Yeah.
It's about 3 miles from my house, and only one of the miles is passable in an ordinary car. So I don't go there as often as I used to. But last summer, I made my way out there again, and it's always been a wonderful, peaceful, soul-enriching spot. But something different happened to me as I was sitting meditating. Suddenly, the meadow was my mother. Not my biological mother, but something way before and outside of time. arms were around me, I was safe, I was warm, and I had never met fear. And that brought me into a new space in my journey. I could feel a little click afterwards. I've moved into a little bit different territory. I'll always, it's one of those thin spaces, as the Celts call it, and even if I never get there again, I will always remember
it.
My mother in the middle of the woods.
Thanks for sharing that, Jackie. You know, each of those little spaces, each of those little moments that we have creates a milieu. Teilhard wrote a book called The Divine Milieu. And it's a milieu out of which we start to move forward from. We may never re-experience that again, but it's there. It's a part of our being. And it's a part of the milieu that we hope that we can operate from more and more and more as we create our own divine milieu. Well, now I will tell you what all my praying, searching, and studying has done for my own self-definition. When I arrived last November at Snowmass, I brought my journals with me and reread how I had come to the statement, I am one with one who is. And so I asked myself, is that where you still are? And listening deeply, my answer was no. What spoke from deep within was, I am becoming with the one who is becoming. That is such a more dynamic and evolutionary statement. And I liked it. And so I used that as the focus of my meditation time. We have many sits on those long retreats. And with every sit, I would begin with, I am one, I am becoming with the one who is becoming. But as the week unfolded, something unique happened. The I was disappearing. And I would say, I am. What manifested itself to me was the statement, I am, may you be, that I addressed earlier. I am, may you be, is a consciousness of interbeing, arising from the very interiority of the beings united. And I became aware that relationship as our is definitely our most fundamental reality, both on the quantum level of physical life and on the higher levels of conscious human life. And so my new self-definition, at least for now, is we are one in becoming with the one who is becoming. We, not I. And so I'll end this presentation this morning by playing another song for you, which I hope will bring to fullness this meaning of we are one in becoming with the one who is becoming. And as Tom gets it ready, we'll pass out the words so that those of you who would like to join in the singing are free to do so. Yes. Okay.
I simply wanted to invite everyone, if you were interested in having joining us a group that is already doing centering prayer on Wednesdays at 5 o'clock at All Saints by the Sea in the parish house. We meet for an hour.
Wonderful.
And we'd love to have you join us.
All Saints by the Sea. Great. I know they had a group at one time. I'm glad it's still... Okay. Mm-hmm. Feel free to sing along as you recognize, as you get familiar.
By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. The air that is my breath is the air that you are breathing, and the air that is your breath is the air that I am breathing. The wind rising in my breast is the wind from the east, from the west, from the north, from the south, breathing in, breathing out. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. The water that is my blood, my sweat, tears from crying, is the water that is your blood, your sweat, tears from crying, and the rising of the tide is in our veins, and in the ocean wide we are in the rising steam, rushing the river, running stream. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. The earth is dust, the earth is clay, flowers blossoming and fading. We are dust and we are clay, we are blossoming and fading. Every color, every sound, every place is holy ground. Oh, every living thing, can you hear it laugh? Can you hear it sing? By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we
I may this mantra sing itself in you, in your souls, as you leave and go home. Namaste. You're welcome.